Wednesday, September 10th, 2025, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope you had a good weekend. I hope that you enjoyed that opening weekend of just jam-packed football, college football, the NFL. We had it all. It was amazing. Hope your week is going well, and I hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And hey, like I've been saying, we suddenly have sports again. College football season is already heating up. We are seeing some teams step up. We are seeing some teams slide back. The NFL kicked off their regular season this past week too. But never fear, we're going to be covering a lot of both of those today. But I do want to remind you of one other big event that is coming this weekend that might have slipped a little under your radar. Because Mexican Independence Day weekend is traditionally one of the biggest weekends in the world of boxing. Yeah, and this year will be no different. We're going to have Mexican superstar fighter Canelo Alvarez, who is now 63-2-2 with 39 knockouts, putting his undisputed super middleweight championship on the line against former two-division, undisputed, and undefeated champion Terrence Crawford. Crawford is 41-0 with 31 knockouts. That is going to be fought at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas on Saturday. And by the way, you might be sitting there listening and going, well, I'm not going to pay for pay-per-view. I don't want to buy that fight. I get it. It's going to be on Netflix starting at 7 p.m. on Saturday. You don't have to pay if you have that subscription. Just turn it on. Yes, you might have to kind of move some things around so you can still keep up on college football, but Canelo versus Crawford? Hey, this event is being billed as a once-in-a-lifetime by the organizers, and we're going to see if Terrence Crawford can move up two weight classes to challenge Canelo and become the first men's boxer to be an undisputed champion in three different weight classes. Now, for Canelo, this is probably going to be the toughest fight he has faced since he lost to Dmitry Bivol when he attempted to move up and challenge for a light heavyweight title in 2022. That didn't go so well. Now, I'll be honest. I love Crawford. Dude is an absolute warrior. He is slick. He is an extremely intelligent fighter. However, Crawford has never competed at 160 pounds, much less at 168. That's a big jump. And it's not like he's taking a tune-up fight first. He's jumping to 168 and then fighting the undisputed champion in Canelo. Now, that difficulty, I don't know, that is a bit steep to me. And like I said, we saw Canelo try to do something like that when he jumped up to fight Bivol. Bivol bullied him. He was just too strong for Canelo. Now, I am guessing that this jump is going to be a little too much for Crawford. But I will say this. If anyone could pull it off, it would be Terrence Crawford. He is as tough and as smart as they come. I expect Terrence Crawford to go the distance here. But I expect Canelo's strength just to wear him down because Crawford is just a smaller guy. I would take Canelo in a decision if I were betting on this, but this is without a doubt one of the better fights we've had recently. We haven't had anything to watch in the world of boxing lately. This will be better, and we have a couple of decent undercard fights that might be worth checking out. Hey, don't forget about the Canelo-Crawford fight on Saturday night. Hey, today on The Dose, like I said, we now have both college football and the NFL rolling, and we're going to take a look at both of them today. Of course, we've only had 1 week in the books in the NFL, and already we've got the so-called experts telling us all that they know. They know so much. As usual, they're overreacting. And so we're going to look at some of the overreactions that we might want to be a little bit more patient before we declare them. Then, over in college football, it wasn't a great week of college football this last week. Number of good teams facing a number of bad teams. Saw a number of blowouts among the top-ranked teams. I've got a few of those teams, though, and their blowout actually caused me some concern. We'll get to that in just a minute. We will also have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today, Here's a question I have for you. Does losing early in the college football season doom your entire season? I'm going to look at a few teams today that decided to test that theory. But first off, I do have one story I want to touch on this week. And I know it is not basketball season per se right now. However, we need to touch on this. Last week, there was a big story coming out of the NBA that we need to cover. Not sure if you've checked out Pablo Torre, whose podcast Pablo Torre Finds Out has been digging into a number of stories recently. He did a brief investigation into Bill Belichick's girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. He dug into the NFL's Player Association a little bit. And last week, Pablo Torre dropped a big one because he uncovered evidence of the Los Angeles Clippers allegedly circumventing the salary cap to pay Kawhi Leonard and hiding that money in a laundering scheme of a tree planting company that went bankrupt. And I know as I say that, that sounds insane. Let me give you a brief synopsis. Back in 2019, Leonard signed a three-year, $103 million contract with the Clippers in free agency. And the NBA actually investigated the Clippers' pursuit of the famously mysterious and kind of weird superstar because there were allegations that his camp was seeking improper benefits. Now, according to Pablo Torre's investigation, Leonard also signed a $28 million endorsement deal with a company named Aspiration, which they say helps companies go carbon neutral, and had financial ties to Clippers owner Steve Ballmer. However, there were no actual obligations, so he wasn't really going to work for this company. He was just going to get the money. And that was right around 2021 when he got an extension with the Clippers. So per the contract, it was just free money. He didn't have to do anything for it. It was just a bonus to give him. Now I know. Far be it from me to think the NBA is ever doing anything unsavory, right? That league is always on the up and up. However, what I do want to watch over the next few months is, does this just go away? Did we just not hear anything more about it? Yeah, not really sure what happened there. Some crazy, not really sure. Or are we going to start hearing about, well, we weren't the only ones doing it. Teams all over the league have been doing this for years. Is this common? Is this common among other teams? Is this common among other sports leagues? And again, the absolute biggest question that I have for this story of Kawhi Leonard possibly getting paid money by the Los Angeles Clippers for basically nothing is, if you're blatantly cheating and you're doing so to get an advantage, then shouldn't you actually be good? Shouldn't you actually be winning? The Clippers never win anything. So how did it benefit them? Because they're always, always, always terrible. So the NFL season kicked off last week, and we did see some very interesting games already in just week one. But as we know, it takes quite a while to solve the mysteries of a new NFL season. I mean, you can say that after 1 week, we already know exactly how this season is going to go, but we don't. And we're already hearing some overreactions that seem completely silly to me. So let's take a look at some of the biggest. And let's just say it, some of the dumbest.
That was an overreaction.
The Buffalo Bills came back from a 15-point deficit in the fourth quarter on Sunday night as quarterback Josh Allen went on a tear, and the Baltimore Ravens could just do nothing right in the final 15 minutes. So now we are hearing, hey, the Buffalo Bills, they are the top team in the AFC, if not the entire league, right? Hey, I picked the Bills last week to win the Super Bowl. I should be all in on this take. And yet I saw a few things that concern me. For one, the Ravens' best players keep making crucial mistakes in big games. I mean, remember the playoffs last year? You had Lamar Jackson, kept fumbling, throwing interceptions, Mark Andrews dropping a pass. And then on Sunday night, Lamar Jackson making mistakes, running back Derrick Henry, putting the ball on the ground When do the Ravens' big players make the big plays? Their defense completely collapsed. And again, this isn't the first time. Those same things happened last year in the playoff game against the Bills. And they've happened before in playoff games. But you know, the other big concern for me, because we can just look at it and say, well, the Ravens, hey, they're not up for the moment, whatever. But also remember on Sunday night that the Bills defense allowed 432 yards and the Ravens were averaging over 8 yards per play. That's not good. The Buffalo Bills pass rush, it was mostly non-existent. I'm going to need to see way more from Buffalo before I buy this hype. I actually came away a little bit unimpressed with both teams. And I know that's probably blasphemy right now. But I kind of looked at both teams like, I don't know if either one of you can play any defense. We'll see. Of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers came out and won a game in week one, and they looked, well, decent. Hey, maybe Aaron Rodgers is going to be better than everyone expects. Maybe the Steelers are actually going to be a sneaky team in the AFC. Now, again, I picked the Steelers to make the playoffs last week. I should be all in on this. On Sunday, the Steelers beat the New York Jets 34-32. Aaron Rodgers passed for 244 yards. He threw four touchdowns. But I want to lob out one word of caution, or maybe two. One, the Steelers could not run the ball at all. That could be a problem. And two, that Steelers defense allowed the Jets and quarterback Justin Fields to rack up nearly 400 yards of offense. And here's the worst news. A lot of that was running the ball. The Jets rushed for nearly 200 yards. Hey, if teams can run the ball in the Steelers this year, and on the flip side, the Steelers aren't running the ball very effectively themselves, yeah, I don't like their odds. I'm still going to be a little wary of Pittsburgh. I'm going to need to see a little bit more. Of course, the NFL season kicked off last Thursday when the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Dallas Cowboys 24-20 in a game that was closer than many of us were expecting or hoping for. And while I know the narrative is that the Cowboys were just terrible, I get it. Isn't completely accurate. I mean, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense actually put up a pretty good fight. In fact, I'll go one step further. It kind of looked like Dak and the Cowboys had some momentum when that weather delay happened for Lightning. I mean, the Cowboys did outgain the Eagles on the night. Now, some of that was because Eagles defensive lineman Jalen Carter was ejected for having a spitting contest with Dak prior to the game. So I'm sure that helped Dallas too. And I'm not even saying the Cowboys are Super Bowl contenders, but they actually might be a little better than I expected. And those two wide receivers, when you've got Pickens on one side, CeeDee Lamb on the other side, that's a pretty tough matchup for defenses. The Cowboys are going to have to prove they can play defense. That offense might be concerning. They might be not terrible. Don't be surprised if the Cowboys play themselves into playoff contention. Because it might happen. On Friday night, we got an early AFC West matchup as the Kansas City Chiefs faced the Los Angeles Chargers. And it was actually the Chargers that made all the plays late and came out on top 27-21. And I know it sounds crazy, but right now, the Chiefs are in last place in the AFC West as every other team in the division won. Yes, it's only 1 week, but they are dead last. Are the Chiefs going to have that season where they fall off a cliff? Hey, it could happen. Next up, they face the Eagles. That won't be easy. And then they get the Ravens in week four. That won't be easy. And while it won't shock me if the Chiefs do slip this year, because it is so hard to rebound from a Super Bowl loss historically, go back and look. It doesn't happen very often. And yet, until you kill them, the Chiefs aren't dead. Now wide receiver Xavier Worthy is banged up, thanks to Travis Kelce. And the Chiefs already have had concerns at wideout. I know they're going to get Rashee Rice back eventually. He's not there yet. But I'll say this. My concern for the Chiefs is more that their running game is very average. Do you realize that on Friday night, Patrick Mahomes was their leading rusher against the Chargers? and also that their defense didn't get much pressure all night on Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert. Here's the bottom line for the Chiefs. And I still expect them to be a contender. I still expect them to be tough. But I'm not sure opponents are afraid of the Chiefs anymore. I'm not going to count them out just yet. But they definitely have a different feel to them. The Detroit Lions started the season, well, with a fizzle on Sunday, as they were easily handled by the Green Bay Packers 27-13. Should Lions fans be concerned about what they saw this week in week one? Yeah, probably a little. You know, the biggest thing that stood out to me in that game was the lack of toughness that we saw from Detroit. The defense had no pass rush. The offense had no run game. Jared Goff didn't look that great. But I will cut the Lions some slack because remember, they lost both offensive coordinator Ben Johnson and defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn. And I know you say, well, you just get new guys, but you don't. You can't just replace those guys overnight. So the Lions have to allow their coordinators to kind of get up to speed, and then we'll see. But I was a little concerned with what I saw from the Lions on Sunday because they didn't look like they were quite as tough and quite as scrappy and playing quite as hard as they have in the past. I won't say they're done just yet, but they need to show some improvement for sure. One team that actually looked a little better than I expected on Sunday was the San Francisco 49ers. They went on the road and beat the Seattle Seahawks 17-13. Quarterback Brock Purdy, he looked pretty good. Joey Bosa was putting pressure on Seahawks quarterback Sam Darnold. And, you know, we talked about it last week. The Niners have a very, very easy schedule. So are the Niners back? Are they a contender? Well, maybe. But I've still got some concerns. One, the Niners have no receivers. And I'm not just saying wide receivers. Receivers in general. Now George Kittle is out. He was placed on IR. Brandon Ayuk is out. Juwan Jennings is out. We know Deebo Samuel is gone. That brings me to the next problem for San Francisco. Because everyone is out on Sunday, running back Christian McCaffrey, who we know is always hurt, had 22 carries and 9 receptions. So Christian McCaffrey had 31 touches on Sunday. You think he's going to hold up with that much work? There were questions whether or not he was even going to play on Sunday. Hey, I'm not trying to jinx him. I love me some Christian McCaffrey. He ain't going to make it to October at that rate. There's no way. The Niners need to get healthy if they're going to do anything, and they need to keep Christian healthy, and that won't be the case at this rate. Finally, we reach one team that might have had the worst week in the NFL, and that was the Miami Dolphins. Hey, the Dolphins on Sunday, honestly, they look like the worst team in the league. Miami faced the Indianapolis Colts and got dragged up and down that field to the tune of a score of 33-8. And it's kind of weird because I don't know that that game felt that close. So, I know it's early, it's week one, but are the Dolphins really the worst team in the league? Is head coach Mike McDaniel going to be the first head coach fired? Is Tua Tagovailoa really just a complete and utter disaster? Or are people completely overreacting? Well, I'll say this. That defense made Colts quarterback Daniel Jones look not good, great. Tua, meanwhile, had 114 yards and 2 interceptions. Yeah, I don't know if that's an overreaction. I think they might actually be getting this one right. Again, people have figured out Mike McDaniel's offense. No one seems to be afraid of it. No one seems to be worried about it. And they're shutting it down. I'm not sure that this is an overreaction. The Dolphins actually might be the worst team in the NFL.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Hey, remember that you should be stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week to see what new things we have going on over there. We have links to the podcast, and we have links to new articles each week. In fact, if you didn't see it, article went up this week where we gave some grades out to the Denver Broncos for their week one win over the Tennessee Titans. I will warn you ahead of time, not all those grades were good, but you can also email the podcast at DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. I actually have to take a minute. We have heard from a few listeners lately. I heard from a couple listeners say that they went and put money down on our NFL preview and college football previews the past few weeks. They literally took our picks and went and put money down on what we said. Again, I have no problem with it. I don't expect a check if you win. I also don't want to hear you complaining if you lose. That isn't our fault. But we always love to hear from our listeners, so don't be afraid to drop us a line over at dailydosports@gmail.com. And remember, you can go to dailydosports.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, baseball caps. They have it all. You can find it at dailydosports.com. Okay, so over the weekend, college football didn't have as many of the big marquee matchups that we had in week one. And we actually have a couple of good matchups this week coming. Clemson goes to Georgia Tech. Georgia goes to Tennessee. Texas A&M goes to Notre Dame in what might be a must-win game for the Irish. But this past week, we saw some blowouts. Ohio State beat Grambling 70-0. Miami beat poor Bethune-Cookman 45-3. And Oregon beat Oklahoma State 69-3. I had to look and make sure that was really Oklahoma State. But there were a few games that were kind of blowouts, and yet they made me a bit concerned. I'll show you what I mean. First off, the LSU Tigers do not like to play Louisiana Tech. That is an in-state rivalry. That is a dangerous game, and LSU knows it. But it was on the schedule, and I watched a little of it. And as impressed as I was with LSU coming back on Clemson in week one, I thought they looked pretty average on Saturday. They beat Louisiana Tech 23-7, and the Tigers' defense was tough all day, but that LSU offense was sloppy. Now, maybe that's just because it was Louisiana Tech. Or maybe LSU can't run the ball as consistently as we were thinking they could. That could be a problem down the road. And also, keep this in mind, LSU hosts what has to be a very angry Florida this week. Now, the Tigers should handle the Gators easily. Right? We'll see. I was also concerned by the performance that I saw from the Clemson Tigers on Saturday. Yes, Clemson managed to beat Troy 27-16, but do you realize that the score was actually 16-0 in favor of Troy before Clemson kind of woke up? You know, I keep waiting for quarterback Cade Klubnik to just take over and be consistently good, but it isn't happening. I mean, at what point should Dabo Swinney start getting nervous? Because tougher games are coming, and the ACC is still not going to be great, but there might be sneakier teams in the ACC than we thought. Finally, I started to get real concerned with what I saw from the Georgia Bulldogs on Saturday. Yes, they beat Austin Peay 28-6, but why is Georgia quarterback Gunnar Stockton struggling with a team like Austin Peay? Stockton finished the game with zero touchdowns, 227 yards, but he had to throw it 34 times on Saturday. Why would you have to throw the ball that much? Like, why couldn't you run the ball? Austin Peay, they're FCS. They're not even an FBS school. If I'm Georgia, maybe you were looking past Austin Peay to Tennessee, or maybe you should be a little bit concerned going in to play Tennessee, because that game might be a dogfight. Couple of interesting games coming this week. Not a huge list of big matchups, but a few interesting ones to keep an eye on. And then college football is about to really heat up. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, in college football, like I said, we have already seen some of the top-ranked teams get knocked off this year in just the first two and a half weeks, really, of the season. I mean, Texas, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Florida already have losses on their resumes, and they were all top 25 teams. Now, maybe these losses are a sign of things to come. That is very possible. However, we have seen in the past where teams lost their openers and then rebounded and actually got on quite a roll. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top five college football teams that lost a very early game and still managed to go on and do some very big things. We start off at number five. The Ohio State Buckeyes had been on a bit of a bad streak. After they won the national championship back in 2002, on maybe one of the worst calls in the history of sports, The Buckeyes kept coming up short. They had been to a few title games, but they always got blown out when they got there. But when Urban Meyer went to Columbus back in 2012, there was some new hope. And 2014 was the very first year of the new and improved college football playoff, where we'd get four teams playing it off instead of just two. Well, Urban had a pretty stacked squad. He had JT Barrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Thomas, Joey Bosa. The Buckeyes opened the season by beating Navy in week one. But in week two, the Buckeyes faced a pretty average Virginia Tech team. And Ohio State was sloppy. They turned the ball over three times, and their final turnover was actually a pick six for the Hokies. Virginia Tech upset Ohio State 35-21. Hey, that's not an accident. They handled them. The Hokies would go on to just go 7-6 on the year. Meanwhile, the Buckeyes kind of pulled it together. They rallied. They won 13 straight games, including beating Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. Then they upset number one Alabama in the college football playoff. And then they beat Oregon in the national championship and brought a title back to Columbus. Hey, they stumbled early, but Ohio State got it rolling and they won it all. And they come in today at number five. We move next to number four, and we go to the very next year. Because after winning back-to-back championships in 2011 and 2012, the Alabama Crimson Tide had lost two straight Sugar Bowls in 2013 and 2014. But in 2015, Nick Saban was returning some serious talent. Quarterback Jake Coker, wide receiver Calvin Ridley, tight end O.J. Howard, running back Derrick Henry. I mean, that was a good NFL team, let alone a college team. The Tide opened with easy wins over Wisconsin and Middle Tennessee State, and then they hosted Hugh Freeze and the Ole Miss Rebels. And somehow, some way, Ole Miss quarterback Chad Kelly shredded the Tide for 341 yards and three touchdowns, and the Ole Miss Rebels beat Alabama 43-37 in Tuscaloosa. Well, I guess Alabama's done, and it's barely September. But again, then Alabama got rolling. They won 11 games in a row. They beat Georgia. They beat Texas A&M, LSU, Mississippi State, Florida in the SEC title game, and then they pounded Michigan State in the college football playoff before outscoring Clemson 45-40 in the title game. The 2015 Alabama Crimson Tide lost to Ole Miss, and then they came back and won it all, and they come in at number four. Next up at number three, we go back in time a number of years. In 1989, the University of Colorado was one of the biggest surprises in college football. They went 11-0 under head coach Bill McCartney, and that roster was stacked with NFL talent. Darian Hagan was a quarterback. Okay, he wasn't really a great quarterback, but he was a good option guy. Eric Bieniemy at running back, Mike Pritchard, Alfred Williams, Kenavis McGee, Deion Figures, Chad Brown, Greg Beaker. But when they faced Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl that year, well, Lou Holtz was just a better game day coach than Bill McCartney, and Notre Dame escaped with a win. Okay, well, CU brought pretty much everyone back in 1990, so they should be even better. Well, the Buffs opened the season against Tennessee, and that game actually ended in a 31-31 tie. And no, that wasn't Peyton Manning. That was Andy Kelly at quarterback. The Buffs would then scrape past Stanford in week two in a close game. And then they went to Illinois, where the Fighting Illini and fullback Howard Griffith would shock CU 23-21. So 3 weeks into the season, that CU is expected to compete for a title, and they're 1-1-1. But the Buffs' talent would eventually take over. They would roll off 10 straight wins, including a fifth down game and maybe a dicey 10-9 win over Notre Dame in an Orange Bowl rematch. And Colorado would bounce back and win the national championship. Lucky? Yes. Dicey? Very. But Colorado comes in today at number three. We arrive at number two on our list of college football teams that lost a very early game but bounced back in a big way. And we go clear back to 1974, where head coach John McKay had a loaded team at the University of Southern California. He had Pat Hayden and Vince Evans at quarterback. Anthony Davis at running back. Ricky Bell was backing him up. Shelton Diggs at wide receiver. Rod Martin at linebacker. So why in the world did USC lose their opener 22-7 to the Arkansas Razorbacks? Well, USC struggled to get going, and the only points they scored in that game was a 100-yard kickoff return by Anthony Davis. But Pat Hayden threw four interceptions. Hey, maybe this team was overrated. But again, they got rolling. And they would go unbeaten for the rest of the season and then beat number 3 Ohio State in the Rose Bowl to win the national championship. I don't know, maybe they had a flat day. Remember, these are college kids. They're 18, 19-year-olds. They might have an off day. They might be worried about their girlfriend. They might not have prepared like they should have. Whatever it was, USC looked terrible to start, but they got it rolling in 74, and they come in today at number 2. So we reach the number 1 team that started slow, but got red hot later, and we go back to 1983. Howard Schnellenberger was at the University of Miami, and they were improving every year. In 83, the Hurricanes had a freshman quarterback by the name of Bernie Kosar. They had a guy named Alonzo Highsmith at running back. They had Melvin Bratton at fullback, Eddie Brown at wide receiver, Jerome Brown, Winston Moss, Kevin Fagan. That team was so talented, but they were very young. These were all underclassmen. So they opened the season by just getting demolished by the Florida Gators 28-3 in a game during which Miami committed 8 turnovers. Imagine that happening today. The memers would have a heyday. But of course, after that game, Miami would figure things out. They would grow up. They would blow out number 13 Notre Dame, number 12 West Virginia, and then they scraped out a win over number 1 Nebraska in one of the greatest games ever in the Orange Bowl. And the Miami Hurricanes would win the title. So some of these teams starting slow this year, it could be a sign that they're overrated. That's very possible. Or it could be that they need to grow up and shore up some deficiencies, and they might end up getting rolling. You can bounce back from an early loss in college football. You can even bounce back from a bad loss in college football. But you have to shut out all the chatter. You've got to focus on the job at hand, and you've really, really got to go to work. We will see if any of the teams that have lost early so far are going to be capable of rallying and going on to something bigger and better. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will check in on that Canelo versus Crawford fight. And of course, we will keep you up on all that is going on in the world of sports, including, I'm sure, another exciting week in college football and the NFL. So be sure you check out The Daily Dose, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, and for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.